why do nice guys actually finish last, especially when it comes to love, sex, and relationships?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, that's the meme is nice guys finish last. And quite honestly, I'm not sure that's actually 100% true. I actually have a course that I built 20 plus years ago, right after the book came out, called Nice Guys Don't Finish Last, They Rot in Middle Management. So the truth is, what I see with a lot of the men I work with that identify as being nice guys, maybe passively pleasing, approval seeking, trying to get external validation, codependent, is that they don't always so much finish last. They finish kind of middle of the pack because a lot of times they're conscientious, you know, they're caring. And so they do well. I say nice guys often do good, but don't do great. And a lot of guys get into relationships, but once they get there and their nice guy traits kind of get magnified because, you know, they've got a sunk cost, they've got an investment, they don't want to lose this person in their life, they get even nicer and nicer and nicer. And I've done the same thing where you try harder to please your partner, don't ever want them upset, you avoid conflict. And actually that just works against you. And that's where maybe the finish last part comes in. The more we seek other people's approval, the less likely we are to get it. And so that really gets manifested in all areas of life, but especially perhaps in our most intimate relationships. So yeah, when we go trying to get the approval of somebody so that they'll like us, want to hang out with us, want to get naked with us, it often has the exact opposite effect of what we're trying to achieve.
Yeah, Andy Warhol said, as soon as you stop wanting something, you get it. I find that to be axiomatically true. Why is that the case when we want approval from others, it's actually a turnoff?
Yeah. Well, just, I mean, think about it. Think about the people in your life that you've always just been naturally, organically drawn to. Often, you know, they had a certain degree of social skill about them. They could interact with people. They weren't timid. They weren't anxious. But they weren't aggressive either. Maybe they're comfortable in their own skin. You know, they just kind of moved with a certain level of comfort. And there was a fluidness about them. And they could show interest in you, be curious without trying to get your approval or get you to like them. And especially if they're kind of at least a little bit intelligent, have a little bit of a sense of humor, they're fun to be around, right? Because they're not trying to get you to like them. You just like them because they don't try to get you to like them. And you just want to be around them. It just feels good to be around them. So, but there's something about trying to get somebody's approval that it usually triggers a strong bout of anxiety, trying too hard, or becoming passive or indirect. It doesn't manifest as that kind of comfort that people just want to be around. And especially when this is men interacting with women, when the men kind of go interact with women, like the woman has something he wants, and he's trying to get her approval and to give it. She's now the decider. And for most women, once they're the decider, they lose interest in a guy. They for the woman really to be turned on by a guy, she really wants to be the one trying to get the guy to decide to pick her. And so I'll kind of segue this out a little bit because what I see working, I've been working with men for over 30 years. And one of the patterns that I see in so many men, especially as we get younger and younger and younger, like down to Gen Z, like people like you, is that young men, when they're supposed to, have never gone through a masculine initiation, whatever that might look like. I mean, it could be sports. It could be the military. It could be, you know, a father or a powerful male figure in the boy's life, taking him out in the woods, the wilderness, learning to hunt, camp, you know, go on a vision quest, whatever it might be. Most men for the last several years have never gone through a masculine initiation. And what role that served throughout most of human history, like really, literally most of human history, it's probably only been the last 100, 150 years that that's not existed for young men, some kind of initiation. It initiates us into the challenging world of the masculine, gives us the skill sets we need to navigate that world of the masculine, and a confidence to know we can do it, and usually a team that has our back or that's working at our side. Once that happens to a young man, he gets that confidence in himself and his capabilities. And now he has something that the women want, right? Initiated men don't have to pursue or chase women. initiated men tend to just attract women because of that confidence, a sense of security, a mastery in the way that they interact with the world. And the feminine is just highly turned on by that. So when a man hasn't been initiated and he goes chasing a woman, trying to get her to like him, trying to get her to get naked with him, that's just a big turnoff for the woman, because the woman doesn't. I heard David Data say one time, what woman would be attracted to a man whose greatest passion is her? Right? We got to have some other deeper, greater passion in life to attract, let's just say attract the feminine, whatever that might be. Might be women, dogs, cats, babies, money, adventure, opportunity. There's got to be a certain sense of fullness of oneself to attract that. If we're empty and insecure and anxious, we're not going to attract much of anything.
Yeah, if we don't have something else to focus on, we're probably focusing too much on ourselves, and that signals insecurity, which is unattractive, right?
You know, yeah, that focusing on self, usually what happens with most insecure men is they're in their heads. They're thinking way too much. Like, for example, when I got divorced in my late 40s and got out into, you know, the single dating world for the first time, really, in my adult life, I didn't know really where to start. So, you know, I started reading stuff, watching stuff, listening to stuff. But mainly I just went out and started. I just got out and became a social animal. Mm-hmm. And I was bold and I'd take risks. And when I started having success dating women, which surprised me because I never had that as a young man, my male clients said, Robert, teach us. Tell us what you're doing. I said, well, I'm not a dating guru. And they said, but it's whatever you're doing is working. And so I would try to break that down. And so, for example, by the way, guys love techniques. They love to, you know, tell me what to do. I'll go do it, right? We've become geeks with techniques. You know, I watched this on a YouTube video. I'm going to go try it with every woman I meet. And so I would try to, you know, avoid giving guys techniques, but more principles to guide them. Now, one of them that's really pretty popular, I call it the three T's. So I tell men, touch, tease, and tell. When you're interacting with a woman, touch her, lean into her, kind of bump up against her, take your hand and lead her somewhere, put your hand on the small of her back, touch her and tell her what to do. Come here, come on over here, stand up, turn around. Let me look at this. Hey, give me your number. I'm going to tell her what to do and tease her, be playful with her, have fun, make up a nickname for her. Now, what happens is guys want to turn all those into techniques. You know, give me the touch technique. Give me the tell technique. You know, give me the tease technique. And I said, no, all I want you to do is to remember those things are important and don't censor those out. Because like, for example, when I'll talk with guys about being playful and teasing with a woman. Now, it's not telling her jokes. It's just, you know, speaking the obvious or being playful. And guys will say, well, I'm not funny. I can't ever think of anything funny to say. And I'll go, I know you. You actually are very funny. You have a very dry wit. But I said, what happens to you as soon as you have that thought, you block it. You don't say it. Or if you do say it, you waited too long. You're right. Yeah. So I tell men, blurt, act on impulse. If it's on the tip of your brain, say it. If you have that impulse, do it. If you want to take her hand, take her hand. If you want to lean in, lean in. But what happens when men get insecure and anxious or thinking too much? What if she doesn't like that? Oh, what if she's got a boyfriend around the corner and he comes and beats me up? What if she, you know, posts something on social media? What if I get accused of this? And so there's so much in their heads. Who wants to get close to that? And so they're just radiating anxiety. And in most animals, especially humans, anxiety is contagious, which that's actually a survival part of our species. So if a man's anxious and a woman's close to him, she's going to feel his anxiety. And she's going to go, why do I feel so weird around this guy? And she's going to want to get away. So it triggers anxiety. The Buddha says attachment to outcomes, the root of all suffering. So I want that woman to like me. I want to get her number. And I also say it's the cause of all anxiety. I want her to like me. Oh, now you're anxious. Now she's the decider. She has all the power. And women aren't attracted to men who appear to have less power than them. So I know I'm throwing a whole lot of stuff out there all at once, but we can take any of this apart anywhere you want to go with it.
The overthinking thing is really interesting. I think we instinctively, almost subconsciously, know somewhat of the right direction to go, but then the other parts of our brain, the rational, the neocortex, is then second guessing and giving us these limiting beliefs that's stopping us from acting on that impulse? Because maybe, I don't know, what makes us believe these limiting beliefs? Is it just our own insecurities, or is it also a societal thing as well, or fear of, I guess, punishment?
Probably all of the above. And I'm going to throw in that thing again about masculine initiation. Masculine initiation teaches you to be comfortable, feeling uncomfortable. It teaches you to trust your intuition, your instincts, what your gut says. And again, most of us have not been taught to trust those things about ourselves. And we've not been taught the skills we need to survive in the real world. I mean, you know, getting really good at World of Warcraft or, you know, video games, those aren't skills that necessarily translate into getting you ahead in the real world. Even knowing how to build an amazing click funnel isn't necessarily the skills you need to interact with the world. And now with AI, fuck, nobody's going to have any skills, you know. You won't need them. I've lived in Mexico. You and I were talking about this before we started. I've lived down here about 15 years, been coming here over 25. And I was working on my Spanish, and I'm for whatever reason, language doesn't come easy for me. I'm pretty sharp in other ways. But I met a woman down here who we're coming up on our 9th wedding anniversary in November, and she's Mexican and doesn't speak English. So I've learned Spanish, and I'm decent. I'm not completely fluent. When my wife's talking to her kids, I still don't understand them because there's so much slang and they do talk fast. So anyway, about 2 months ago, my wife was flying from here to Mexico City to Bogota in Colombia. And so I had out Perplexity on my phone. It's ChatGPT and Claude. And I was asking it a question about the airport in Mexico City because she was going to have to go from one terminal to another and ask what terminal each of her two airlines. And so it gave me the information in English. I asked it in English, but my wife's sitting there with me. And so I then translated to my wife. I said, told her in Spanish what Perplexity had told me in English. And then Perplexity, because I hadn't turned it off, started talking in Spanish with an impeccable Mexican accent, repeating what I just kind of said that was true. I thought, uh-oh. So then I asked it a question about the airport in Bogota. And then it started speaking with a Colombian accent in Spanish. And I look at my wife, I turn it off, I put the phone down. I look at my wife and I said, if this had existed 10 years ago, I would not have learned Spanish. Because we could have just walked around with it. I mean, as it was, we were always looking up words, you know, looking for Google Translate. But now with Google Translate, my coach did a therapy session with my wife and I about 2 weeks, 3 weeks ago in Austin using Google Translate. She'd speak in English, she'd come out in Spanish. I've heard that the new AirPods by Apple, they'll translate any language for you in real time.
Wow.
So I make all that point because, if I didn't have to learn Spanish, I would have just walked around my phone out all the time. And I think I'd be a lesser person for not having challenged myself to learn that new skill that lets me function in this world I live in so much better. I mean, if I'm now talking to a Mexican person and I can speak in Spanish, I can get a lot more done and get a lot further ahead than if, you know, I didn't know how to speak it. So my point is, we are probably moving in the direction of becoming less and less skilled, right? And now probably we'll just use AI. Men will use AI to hit on women. All right, give me a good pickup line, you know, and we'll hold the phone up, you know, for the woman, you know. She'll probably hold her phone up, you know, just with the middle finger like that. So I don't remember your exact question, but we're losing. You were asking really, why don't we have those abilities? And part of it is because we've not been taught to trust them. Because we've maybe had painful experiences growing up. One thing about young men is young men don't tend to be as socially adept as young women. I mean, I'm even talking about in childhood even, right? Boys tend to isolate more, tend to be in their head more. Girls are out interacting with each other, playing social games with each other, building their hierarchies, you know, pushing one person away and creating alliances with other. And we boys are just going, I don't get any of that. And I liken it to like, if you and I got translated to another planet, right? And they just plopped us down in these beings on another planet. And we did not know the language, did not know the social customs. And they said, go mate.
Yeah.
Go find somebody to mate with. We'd have no clue of how that even worked.
Yeah.
That's really how most boys, most young men feel around women. When it's time to mate, when their body says, go mate, we go, I don't even know where to start. Yeah. I don't know how to talk to them. I don't know how to interact with them. And then, so, you know, we do go watch the YouTube videos. We do go watch all the pickup stuff. We do read all the red pill stuff in the manosphere. And then we go try to play these games with women. And they're going, I've heard that line several times today, you know? Yeah. And so a lot of that does have to do with our self-limiting beliefs, mm-hmm. our view of ourselves in the world, not having been initiated, not having confidence in our skill set. And something that I teach in a lot of my workshops, when I do small group workshops with men, is a principle that I got from the book, The Road Less Traveled by Dr. M. Scott Peck. Most young adults haven't heard of the book. I mean, we got all these other, you know, books that have come out over the last however many years. It's probably 40 plus years old, 50 years old, the book, but it is the all-time best-selling self-help book. And I read somewhere recently that James Clear's Atomic Habits will probably overtake it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And we've all heard of, you know, Atomic Habits. So think about how important of a book that is. And The Road Less Traveled has still sold more copies.
Wow.
Okay. So in that Road Less Traveled, he shares a principle, a lot of good stuff in there. But one of the principles is that if as children, little children, like just babies, 2 days old, 2 weeks old, 2 months, 2 years old, if our parents were sufficiently getting their own needs met, so their buckets were full, they were attentive to us, not hovering, not helicopter, like a lot of parents nowadays, or some parents, but just attentive, noticing, what do we need? And paying attention to those needs. And Scott Peck says, if our parents met our needs in a timely and judicious fashion, and I add to that consistent, because I think that's important.
Yeah, yeah.
So if a parent meets a child's needs from day one, gives the child what they need, when they need it, in judicious amounts and with consistency, Scott Peck, Dr. Peck, says that a child will internalize an emotional belief. Now, not words, not pictures, but emotions stored up in a very primal part of our brain down here called the amygdala. It's the source of all survival. It's fight, flight, freeze, and it stores up emotional memories. And what happens if we get our needs met in those timely, judicious, consistent ways, we internalize the following beliefs, according to Dr. Peck. And that is, I'm lovable, my needs are important, and the world is like my family.
Mm.
Okay. So can you imagine if that is your machine language, your operating language, your used to be called your DOS, right? That's running underneath all the apps. The apps all run on top of it. Your machine language, when you go to kindergarten for the first day, and your machine language is, I'm lovable, my needs are important, and kindergarten's going to be just like my family. Or how about junior high, right? You start going through puberty, the girls have already beat you through puberty, they've already got breasts, they already look sexy, and you start getting those hormones, and you go, I'm lovable, my needs are important, and junior high girls are going to be just like my family. Or as a young adult, you get out in the world, maybe your first job, or you decide to travel the world or build your first click funnel or whatever, and you still believe your operating language is, I'm lovable, my needs are important, and the world's like my family. And what if that's gotten reinforced because the way you interacted with the world from that sense of belief actually invited that from the world, right? Because the world is always going to be as we believe it to be.
I don't know
if I agree with Joe Dispenza, the whole law of attraction, or even Think and Grow Rich, that if you just think and imagine it, you can pick the quantum field. Maybe that's true. I just don't know. But I do know from a psychological point of view, based on confirmation bias, the world will always look like what we believe it to be, right? Mm-hmm. So for example, if you're a red pill dude and you believe that all women are hypergamous and they're all just looking for the next guy to trade up, you're going to see that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't believe that women are hypergamous and that women can be attracted to a lot of different features in a guy, you'll see that. Or if you're a black pill dude and you think, oh, you have to have sex, or you have to have what is it? Look, status, and money. To get the best women. If that's your belief, guess what? Everywhere you're going to look, you're going to see the guys with looks, status, and money with the hottest, cutest women. But what you won't notice is there'll be short, chubby guys with attractive women too. You won't even see that because it doesn't fit your world paradigm.
Yeah, yeah.
So whatever you believe the world to be, you'll be. So if you believe you're lovable, if you believe your needs are important, and then you will go out and assume the world's going to be just like your family. But what if our needs did not get met in childhood, infancy, in timely, judicious, and consistent ways? It's all on a spectrum, but we're gonna be at the other end of the spectrum that I'm not lovable. Mm. My needs aren't particularly important. Everybody else's needs are more important than mine. And the world's just like my family. Now, we're going to throw in one more thing into this mix. If as little children, our parents used us to meet their needs in some way, right? Whether our parents needed us to make good grades so they'll feel like they're good parents, or like me. My son and stepson were both really good in sports, you know, whether it be American football, baseball, basketball. I'd be sitting in the stands watching the game and go, that's my son. You know, that's me using my son because it made me feel good about myself. My mother used me to take care of her emotional needs, right? To be different from my father. Now, what happens to a child if they're used by their parents to meet the parents' needs? The child will internalize another belief system. Besides, I'm not lovable, my needs aren't important. They also come to believe I'm not good enough. That gets stored in their emotional operating system too, because no child is capable of meeting the needs of an adult, being good enough, present enough, you know, giving enough to meet the needs of an adult. But the child will believe they should be able to, I should be able to make mom happy and make her quit crying. I should be able to make good enough grades that dad won't yell at me. I should, so you internalize you're not good enough. So can you imagine going to kindergarten, believing I'm not lovable, my needs aren't important, I'm not good enough, and kindergarten's going to be just like my family. Junior high, I'm not lovable, my needs aren't important, I'm not good enough, and all the junior high girls are going to see that. And that just gets perpetuated. The more that world gets reinforced to be true, the more we believe it's true beyond a shadow of a doubt. So then what do? Well, if those cheesy pickup lines don't work, we just quit trying. We'll just stay home, play video games, smoke dope, jerk off to porn, whatever. Because why try? Why try? Because that's our belief system. And we've never had anybody help us understand those are inaccurately internalized beliefs. And it takes a lot of work, actually, to get those out of that emotional operating system. Now, the good news is, at least I believe this to be true. I believe even though our minds are not as plastic and absorbent as they were as little children, I believe it's as adults, if we consciously work to get our needs met in timely and judicious ways, we can actually begin to overwrite and rewrite that old programming that says, I'm not good enough. My needs aren't important. I'm not lovable. And so I know for me and a lot of men I've worked with, the more I've worked in making my needs a priority, like I get to bed on time. I get enough sleep every night, right? I wore an Oura ring for years to track the sleep. I found the ways to get enough sleep. Just before this call, I was at the gym, you know, here in Puerto Vallarta, where it's hot and humid, an unair-conditioned gym, right? You know, getting my sweat on. I exercise. I have a nutrition coach. I track macros. I spend time with friends. I'm flying to Australia this weekend. I went camping for 3 weeks just a month or so ago. I really work at filling my bucket and making my needs a priority. And the more I do that, I'm less needy.
Yeah.
I feel lovable. I feel like my needs are important. I feel like I'm good enough. And that seems to attract, I mean, like I said, I go to the gym with my wife. My wife's a gym rat. She's been working out since she's 15. She can kick my ass. I mean, she's done a Muay Thai and kickboxing, and she can out squat me. Probably she can double my squat. And we'll go to the gym. And like, I'm 69. I'll be 70 in a couple months. And I'm in the gym. And, you know, these young women in their 20s are strutting by me, kind of walking by like this, strutting, kind of pulling up their shorts a little bit, hiking them up. And my wife, when I get done, she goes, did you see that woman walking in front of you? I go, yeah, I saw it. Yeah, she goes, oh, I don't like that. And I go, okay. You know, yeah. And she's a jealous Latina. So the point is, you know, I'm almost 70. And without even trying, women still try to get my attention. Mm-hmm. Right? My wife points it out whenever she notices them trying to get my attention. And she's right. They do. Mm-hmm. Right? And I'm not even trying to get their attention. So my point is, if we can fill our buckets and get the coaching we need, the mentoring we need, the nourishing we need, the guidance we need as men, doesn't matter if you're 21, 41, 61, if we can get that from other men, we'll be able to start penetrating women in the world in a very powerful way. But just trying to figure out to do it on our own, that's usually where most of us men go wrong. We try to, you know, we think we should already know how to do everything, right? We shouldn't have to ask questions. We should already be confident. But that's not how it works. We've always needed other men to help level us up, to sharpen us, to support us, to hold us accountable. And so I'm kind of going around the world these days preaching, we men need other men to have the kind of life that you're asking me about. How do we get there? We do it with the help of other men.
Mm. And why has that not been the case for the last 100, 150 years? Like he said, why has that initiation process stopped?
Well,
wait, hold that thought. I'm genuinely so grateful that you've stuck around with us to listen to these fascinating insights from the guest so far. If this episode has given you one piece of knowledge which has helped you understand yourself and the world a little bit better than before, the absolute best way to support us is to pay it forward and hit the share button right now. Don't let this knowledge stay hidden. Please send it to one person who will benefit from this episode. Thank you so much. Let's dive back into the rest of the episode.
It's been kind of a process, right? To the best of my understanding, what sociologists tell us is that for probably 1.5 million years, that's a long time, we humans were tribal. We were hunters-gatherers. We moved from place to place to place. And the tribes that survived had men in them that could effectively hunt, gather, and beat the other tribes that, you know, came to steal the woman or the food or whatever. So in that process, it just evolved almost in every culture that around adolescence, 10, 11, 12 years old, there was something in the culture where the men basically would come take the boys, take them out, and put them through an initiation. Maybe it's a vision quest. Remember the movie 300 when the boy's up in the cave with a spear with the wild animal? Maybe they would tie him to an anthill or put, you know, honey and gloves or something like that and stick him on a bee's nest. And the boy would have to face his fear of death.
Mm-hmm.
All right? And that might be a one-night thing. It might be a week-long thing. It might be several weeks, whatever the various tribes. And these initiations vary all over the world, but there's similarity in that the men took the boys out and helped them face their fear of death and then made them part of the masculine tribe. Now those boys are out hunting, gathering, warring with the men, okay? And so now they had what the women wanted, the furs, the food, and the fucks. And so the women were drawn to the men who were powerful and masterful because they helped the tribe survive. Okay, so that existed for about 1.5 million years. About 10,000 years ago, some of our really maybe not so bright ancestors decided, hey, this piece of land looked pretty good. Why do we keep moving? Let's just stay here, right? Oh, there's some fruit trees here. Let's, you know, oh, I claim this fruit tree is my own. Oh, I'm going to domesticate this animal. This animal is my own. And instead of even like sexually, Mother Nature loved tribal times because even sexual access was communal. Everybody had access to sexual. Mother Nature likes that. Mother Nature loves lots of penises and lots of vaginas. Sexual monogamy is evolutionary sin. Mother Nature does not like monogamy. Okay. Now, monogamy was invented by men to try to control the women. If we can keep them from sleeping around because they're our property and we don't want our woman sleeping with some other dude and now we're raising some other dude's genetic, you know, we don't want that. So we invented all these rules and laws around monogamy. And then we created systems to reinforce them, like religion. And culture. And so what happened is men, we now call this the patriarchy for about the last 10,000 years. I don't use the term patriarchy in like the dark evil sense, you know, like maybe, you know, some people do. Now, yeah, a lot of evil came out of it. Colonialism came out of it. You know, wars came out of it. The conquest came out of it. And the subjugation of other people and slaves and women and children came out of it. So, yeah, there was a lot of not so good stuff that came out of it. But there's also providing and protecting, and there was positive stuff in there as well. But even during those times, like less than 10,000 years or so, when we're more agrarian, i.e. we lived in one place and grew stuff, maybe we raised animals, the boys were still initiated into manhood by the fathers, the grandfathers, the uncles. As soon as the boy could get up and walk around and do stuff, he was out with his dad, his brothers, and the men. And, you know, when the girls could do stuff, they were with their mothers. Now, I'm not saying that those gender roles are right, wrong, good, or bad. It's just the way it was, right? And then we became less agrarian when the Industrial Revolution came along. Fathers started leaving their homes to go to the factories to start building stuff. So they're away from their boys a lot. Now, there was probably still systems to teach boys trades and skills so that when they went to work at 10, you know, 10 years old, They had skill sets. Probably the biggest shift we've seen was after World War II, when, you know, all the men in the world were away fighting. Women went into the factories to build the airplanes, the bombs, to be nurses, to whatever. The men came back, and a lot of women stayed in the workplace. Some went back to being mothers, but more and more women came into the workplace, and more men were in the workplace and not home around their boys. They weren't on a farm teaching them, you know, how to milk a cow, or, you know, how to plow a field, or how to put a shoe on a horse. The fathers weren't there to teach the boys much. And divorce came into the picture that hadn't been there before. And now more and more boys were separated from their fathers. And so when I started working with nice guys 30 years ago, a lot of the guys were probably like me, baby boomers or Gen X. And a lot of guys grew up not feeling connected to their dads, either. Their parents were divorced, dad worked all the time, or dad was addicted or abusive. So I hear men a lot say, yeah, I never felt safe with men. I didn't have a good relationship with them. Nowadays, what I hear a lot of from guys like your age, and this would include my son, who's he just turned 40, so he's a millennial. I hear from the millennials and the Gen Zs, what they say about their fathers is, oh, my dad was a nice guy. And all he ever really taught me is don't piss off, you know, my mother, because that's what he was trying not to do. You're nodding? Okay. My son would say the same thing. He grew up with a nice guy dad. He's 40. And I remember one time my stepson, the same age, my second wife was married to when I wrote No More Mr. Nice Guy. During the time I was actually working on the book, and my boys knew it. And one time I walked in the house and my stepson's mother, my second wife, started just chewing my ass about something. Just, and I think it was, I didn't leave my shoes by the door the way she wanted or something. And I remember my stepson was just watching this. He's probably 14. He goes, Pops, you don't let her talk to you like that, right? My son realized there was something wrong with that picture, that his mother was chewing out his stepdad, right? And he saw me as his father. And I thought, that boy's right. And I turned and looked to her and I said, was there anything else you wanted? She goes, just put your shoes by the door. And I go, no problem. You know, and I kind of just stood up to it, right? And it was good for him to see me just standing up and not just taking for his mother kind of chewing me out, because I didn't put my shoes where she wanted, right? So what I'm hearing is a lot of men nowadays, maybe fathers are around, maybe stepdad, but they're nice guys. And they're trying to please their mother, trying not to upset her, trying to keep her in a good mood. And they're telling the boy, don't piss your mother off, because if she's pissed off at you, she's pissed off at us too. You know, we don't want mom pissed off. That whole happy wife, happy life kind of thing. So I think there's been, you know, a transition from the 1.5 million years of tribal times, 10,000 years of patriarchal, more agrarian society, a couple hundred years of industrial revolution, the last, what, 75 years or so, I have more than that, since World War II, there's been several different transitions. And so what's happened in each one of those transitions, it seems like boys are getting less and less and less direction from men of how to be male, how to live a masculine life, how to be comfortable in their skin, how to be masterful, how to get comfortable feeling discomfort, how to interact with women, how to attract women. It's just, boys just don't learn it in those ways. And I'm like I said, I'm a big fan. I'm traveling the world, basically going to Australia this next week. I'll go to Denmark in November, go to Dallas in December. I was in Japan back in April, just basically communicating with groups of men because we men need other men. Okay. So if our dads didn't initiate us, if the elders of our tribe didn't initiate us, we still can get masculine initiation. And I believe that comes from a depth of connection with other men. Even I think getting vulnerable with other men, finding safe places to get real and authentic and vulnerable with other men is powerful masculine initiation, right? Risking telling another guy, I'm depressed, or I'm addicted to porn or gaming, or risking telling another guy, I'm really unhappy in my marriage and I don't know what to do. That is really a vulnerability that I think is part of our masculine initiation. Then we learn to trust other men, and we learn to let other men give a shit about us as we give a shit about other men. That, I believe, strengthens us and then does make us attractive to the feminine. And again, I put not just women, but you know, money, adventure, opportunity in that bucket of the feminine. Everything that's not nailed down wants to come to us when we're comfortable in our own skin, when we've got purpose, when we're having a good time in life. That just naturally draws all those things to us. And if we're comfortable, we let it in. We walk mm-hmm. through the open doors. We say yes, because why not? It's good stuff. So again, I'm throwing a whole lot of stuff out here for you. And hopefully I answered the question.
No, really good. It's really interesting, the whole evolution of how for millions of years it was a certain way with the initiation, and now in such a short time frame, it's almost flipped on its head and we're only just seeing the consequences of it. And you've mentioned a few of your experiences, you know, you've been through a few marriages, and you was talking about your relationship with your mother. Could you delve a bit more into that and the evolution that you've come through from going maybe being a nice guy to becoming a more integrated man?
Yeah, it's been about a 30-year process since it began, since my second wife said, everybody thinks you're such a nice guy, but you're not. I can't trust you. I can't depend on you. You're passive aggressive. You need help. I thought, you're the one that's unhappy all the time. You need help. So I actually went to join a 12-step group, got a therapist, later joined a men's group, all thinking, you know, I got to find out why me being a nice guy doesn't make my wife happy. And yeah, I'm sure it did begin with my mother, not just with my mother. There were dad issues. My father could be moody and angry. I had a good connection with him in a lot of ways. We played sports together. He came to all my games and practices. We'd go camping and fishing. So my dad had good qualities I'm very grateful for, but he was very moody and very critical. You never knew what mood dad would be in when I came home. And so I didn't want to be like dad. And my mother even told me as a young boy, I'm raising my sons, me and my brother, to be different from my father. Well, that meant be nice to a woman, you know, be attentive. And so I was kind of the golden child of, you know, dad. I played sports with my dad like that with my mother. I'd go shopping with her and I'd listen to her and I'd be there for her. And she taught me to cook and clean and sew and do laundry. And I'm glad she taught me all those things. I'd take care of myself. But she also, you know, basically said how you get approval from a woman is being a good boy, right? Don't be like the angry man. Don't be like the critical man. Don't be like the man that just wants sex, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then I went through angry feminism of the 60s and 70s, where I saw bumper stickers that said an erection's a sign of aggression, or every man's a rapist. I mean, that women had that on their shirts. And
wow.
I mean, if you think toxic masculinity, you know, is rough.
Yeah.
Every man's a rapist. And so I didn't want to be those guys. Right. And when I heard women complaining about the jerks that they were always attracted to, right?
Mm.
Oh, he's such a jerk. Yeah. And I go, but you keep going back to him. I'm the nice guy. I listened to you talk about him. How come you don't want to be with me? But I was hiding my sexual agenda. I thought women didn't like sex and thought men who wanted sex were bad. And so I hid that from them. And so, yeah, you know, and if I did get a girlfriend, I'd hang on to her forever because I didn't know if I'd ever get another one. I was a terrible ender. My first two wives, I mean, both good women in their own way, both had a lot of good characteristics about them. But truth is, I should not have dated either one of them more than two dates. But in both cases, well, she liked me, you know, she wanted to hang out with me. And before long, we were having sex and, oh, okay, I can't leave. And so I was married for 25 years to my first two wives, should not have dated either one of them two dates. Now, my first wife's the mother of my son. I'm grateful for her. She's a good person. Second wife, I'm grateful for because I wrote No More Mr. Nice Guy while I was in that marriage. And so, I mean, I learned a lot in those processes, but it wasn't really till I went and got into a 12-step group that was all men, got into a men's group dealing with sexual shame, and really started connecting with men that my life really started changing. And again, that's when I wrote No More Mr. Nice Guy. And I'm still in men's programs. I still have coaches. I still have a men's group that we meet with every other week on Zoom. We've been doing it for 7 years. We went camping back in August together. And again, I travel the world speaking at men's events. And so I think the thing, when I was a marriage therapist, that's what my doctorate said. I would tell the men who came to me with their wives or girlfriends for therapy, I'd say the best thing you can do is to have good same-sex relationships. Because most men, if they do have good guy friends, they tend to kind of let them go once they get in a relationship because we're trying so hard to please the woman.
Yeah.
Or we're busy. We don't want to say, I'm going away for a weekend with my buddies. Why? Why are you doing that? You know, what am I going to do? So we guys just quit. We kind of let go of our buddies. And that's the worst thing that we can do. And, you know, so I just keep teaching and preaching. If you want an amazing relationship with an amazing woman, I believe it begins with good guy friends and spending time with those guy friends, not just having a friend that, you know, you get on Zoom or you call, you know, every 6 months or a year. Actually, weekly, spending time with men. Daily, ideally, spending time with men. Because going back to our ancestors did not spend much time with women. Now, I'm not saying that's good or bad. It's just the reality. So the way we've evolved as humans is we men evolved to spend the majority of our time with other men, not with women. Nowadays, you know, guys, guys your age, I've noticed, don't really grow up all that much pairing off boyfriend and girlfriend. You guys go out in groups together, right? And you might have a girl you like in that group, and there, you know, girls might have a guy, but you're out in groups. And in the workplace, yeah, of course, there's just as many women as there are men. And so men's institutions have kind of disappeared. And even all studies have shown boys do better educationally if they're in all-boys schools. Boys don't do well when they're in school with girls for a number of different reasons. But unfortunately, most of the institution where men used to go be with men, whether it's in the tribe, whether it's on the farm, whether it's in the factory, whether it's in the military, whether it's in the Rotary or the Kiwanis or some other, they don't exist anymore or, you know, they're co-ed. It's men and women. And again, I'm not preaching against that, but I am saying men still need their guy friends. Do you ever watch Saturday Night Live?
Not a lot, no.
Probably not a lot. It comes on probably, you know, 4 o'clock in the morning where you live. I don't watch it much either, but there's a clip. You can go on YouTube and watch it. And I think it's called like Guy Park. And it's like a dog park, you know, where people take their dogs to socialize and interact. and in this, I mean, they did a really beautiful job with this. What happens? A woman comes home from work and her boyfriend or husband has been home all day, you know, on the computer, maybe works from home, whatever. But totally socially isolated. She comes home and all he wants to talk about is Vin Diesel this or this thing or that thing. And she's, you know, she's just not interested because he hasn't talked to anybody all day and he's just been on the internet. And then so she's talking to a girlfriend whose boyfriend or husband is the exact same way. They go, have you heard about Guy Park? And what they take them and they show the guys in the park learning to like throw a frisbee to each other or kind of bumping shoulders with each other, kind of not knowing really how to interact. And then maybe they kind of get in a tussle with each other because they just like in dog park, right? Where the dogs learn how to socially. And then finally the guys kind of, you know, kind of they connect with each other and give each other a hug. And the two women are watching and go, oh, isn't that nice? They're learning to be social. And then they go, one of the women says, you know, maybe they really do have it harder than we do. And both women look at each other. No, I didn't say that. You know? And so it was really so spot on that we men just, we need that social interaction. The women in our lives, if we have a woman in our life, they need us to have that social interaction. Mm-hmm. My second wife used to tell me when I'd come home from like going on a baseball road trip with my buddies, we'd go away for a weekend to go watch baseball somewhere. I'd come back and my second wife, who really wanted to have sex with me, I'd come home and she goes, you know, I'm really a lot more attracted to you when you've been away for a little while. Mm-hmm. I was out with guys and I came home and I was more attracted. My wife, present wife now, Lupita, was telling me just the other day, I went to Tampa a couple months ago to hang out with some guys I met in Japan who wanted me to come do a live interview with them. And so I went out to dinner three or four times, just four or five guys. And we went to the gym together. You know, we just guy time. And, you know, I'm sending pictures back to my wife. And she told me later, she was talking to my stepson who's 20. And since he met his girlfriend 3 years ago, they've been like joined at the hip. They just like don't go anywhere without each other. And he has no guy friends. Mm-hmm. And my wife was saying that my stepson who's 20 was saying, yeah, when Pop's at home, you know, he works all the time. And she goes, yeah, that's why I'm glad he travels. Because when he travels, he goes and spends time with men because he needs that. I think she was telling me that because she was like kind of preaching to my son about it. You know, you need to be with guys. Just watch your dad. I'm his stepdad. But watch Poppy. You know, he's out there connecting with men. You need that too. You need to get away from that girl that you're with all the time. And the funny thing is, my wife used to ask him, why do you let that woman control you? You shouldn't let that woman control you. And I'm sitting here watching going, how did he learn to let a woman control him? His mother's a pretty strong woman. And, you know, when he was a little boy, you know, she was going through a rough relationship with the boy, my son's father. Anyway, whole other story. But the bottom line is we men need men in our life to have a good relationship with women. The women in our life want us to have a good relationship with men. They don't want to carry all of our emotional burdens. I was reading an article the other day in New York Times. There's a new term called man tending. The women having to take care of the social, emotional needs of the men in their life. Women don't want to do that.
Yeah, it's not right.
They don't want to do that.
Yeah. I so many overlaps between what you've said about you growing up and me, which is interesting. Speaking about the all boys thing, I went to an all boys school and I probably was good in the long run, but during like that period of like 12 to 16, I was like petrified of girls. Like they were like an alien species because
everybody is.
Wouldn't see them. Yeah.
Every boy is.
Yeah.
I mean, adult men, you know, when I tell women, you know, if I'm on an airplane or something or talking to a woman and, oh, what do you do? Well, yeah, I teach men about relationships. Oh, what do you teach them? Right. I teach them married men or single guys. And they go, well, can I ask you a question? And women will go, well, how come like if I'm talking to a guy and, you know, like or I'm seeing across the room, I smile at him, I look at him, you know, I make eye contact with him. How come he won't walk across the room and talk to me? They go, because you scare us. And they go, why? I go, because you're scary. And they go, well, I mean, I'm talking to the guy, you know, we're having a good conversation and I touch his arm a lot and I lean into him and I smile and I laugh at his jokes. And then like we talk and then he like reaches out his hand and says, nice to meet you and walks away. Why doesn't he ask me for my number? And I go, because you scare us. And they go, why? Because you're scary. And they go, we're not scary. And I go, yeah, you are. Right. Yeah, you are. So I don't care if you're 14 or 44. Most of us guys are scared of women. And again, for good reason. When we were little boys, our caregivers were all women. We had to have their approval to survive. Now, like I said, in most cultures, around 12, the man took us away from it. So we quit needing women's approval. But most of us, because we didn't get initiated, at 44, we're still seeking women's approval. Still trying to get them to like us and make them happy and not upset them. Kind of the golden rule of masculinity nowadays, don't piss off the woman. I mean, that's true at work. It's true in relationship. It's true on the street. Don't piss off a woman. There's hell to pay if you piss off a woman. So, of course, they're scary to us. Now, as you were a boy in school, that's why most boy school, all one gender school, whether it be all boy or all girl, usually have another school nearby and have events with them. that dances and social. Disco. So you have those events, so you still get socialized. But actually in the classroom, girls do better in all-girl classrooms. Boys do better in all-boy classrooms for very, very different reasons. But unfortunately, from what I understand, is that anytime school districts or school systems try to go to separate schools, especially around junior high, right, that the feminist groups all complain about that they basically say, well, they're unequal, they're unfair, they're somehow, you know, that women aren't getting a fair shake. So it's the feminist groups that block that, even though all studies that have been done shows women excel, young girls excel academically in all girls schools, young boys excel, do better in all boys schools. Yes, we still need the social interaction because you don't want to graduate high school and never have talked to a girl. I mean, it'd be good to have a little bit of experience before you're 18.
Yeah, but the inverse is actually not effective as well because this is quite unique. I went to an all boys school, right? And then sixth form, so the last 2 years, it was, they turned it into mixed at the all boys school. And then, like you're saying, there was an adjacent school, which was an all girls school. That was also mixed. I went from the all boys school to the all girls school mixed sixth form, which was an very interesting experience. I mean, it didn't help.
Well, tell me, what was that like? What are some of your memories and takeaways of that?
I remember feeling definitely more anxious and I actually became more feminine. My hair became longer. I started wearing like bracelets and necklaces and like adapted myself to that female group
dynamic.
What's
wrong with, you know, bracelets?
No, nothing's wrong with that. No, nothing's wrong with that. It's just before I wasn't doing that and I was maybe dressing up a bit more feminine and acting more feminine and being in touch with my feminine side. But
sure,
I thought, oh, if I'm like this, then girls will like me. But what ended up happening was the opposite. I was overthinking more and more anxious with myself and ruminating more than before at the boys' school. And it had the inverse effect of what I thought it would do. And it took a while to get over
that. That makes sense. Well, it's always been a challenge for men to meet women. But let me put it in this context. Kind of, again, going back, you know, to a million and a half years, you know, you grew up around every woman, right? You knew them since you were a kid. And you know, the best way I know to describe it is probably when the men came back, you know, with the food and the furs and all that, it was an orgy, you know, the women were waiting for the men to come back. And you know, that's what kept our species alive. So sex was pretty uninhibited. Right. You didn't have to convince a girl to have sex with you. It just kind of, you know, every penis went in every vagina. That was a good thing. Then, you know, again, even during more of the patriarchal times where there was I call it the ownership model, where men owned their women and their vaginas and what came out of their vaginas. Even then, most marriages were arranged by families or through coalitions if you were high enough status. But mostly you just, you know, the family next door gave your parents a goat to take their daughter off their hands, and she came to live with you and your family. She became your wife, right? Today, even today in Asia, I still know Indian men who have arranged marriages.
Yeah.
Right? So, and I'm actually not convinced it's a terrible thing. A lot of times the arranged marriages kind of actually work better than, you know, the people we pick for ourselves. And so then even as you come into like, let's say my parents' generation, my mother's 90, she's turned 90. My father died in 2009. But even in their generation, you probably either met somebody at church, that's where my parents met, or at school, you grew up with them. Or my wife, for example, was 8 out of 10 kids. She grew up in Guadalajara, Mexico. Two of her brothers married two of her best friends. So, you know, that's just how it happened. You know, her best friends would come around and her brothers would be around them. And, you know, it's easy. It wasn't all that difficult or complicated. And even the whole idea of romantic love, that you fall in love with somebody and you find your soulmate and you're going to love each other forever. That whole concept maybe has only existed for about 200 years. Really throughout all times, the whole process of you know, getting a partner was really economic. We just needed each other to survive. And it was about having children, right? It was about childbearing and economics. But again, around 200 years or so, the really wealthy people could start playing with this idea of romantic love. And I'm told that Shakespeare wrote Romeo and Juliet to show the fallacy, the stupidity of romantic love. We love each other so much, let's kill ourselves, right? That's romantic love. That works out really well. So, but that's only been around for a while. So, and then, you know, you take the situation now. So dating's never been in human DNA, right? We've only been trying to date really maybe 100 years at most. And again, my parents, they met each other at church. Okay. That was easy enough, right? And then they stayed together until my dad died. So it's like they never really dated as far as I know. And so, but it's really only been like my generation, Generation X, millennial, your generation, that you have to learn how to date. And because nobody ever really did it successfully before us, who's teaching us how to do it other than a bunch of, you know, dating gurus that were in a bunch of great pickup lines? And then we add into maybe the whole thing with porn and just, you know, everywhere you look, you see hot, attractive women not wearing a lot of clothes, like the gym where I worked out with my wife today, or just go to the mall and everybody walking around in their Lululemon, or go on porn and look. You know, my grandfather maybe saw two beautiful women in his lifetime and neither one of them were naked. Right? Now you can see beautiful naked women all over the place. And now your body's going, I like that. That looks good. That makes me feel good. I want that. How do I get that? I have no fucking clue. Right? Oh, OnlyFans. That's what it's called. That's how you get it. So we've really messed things up. You know, maybe things just worked a hell of a lot better 150 years ago, where you did just marry, you know, your sister's best friend, and then you stayed with her. And maybe, and again, I'm not saying there's one way better than another. What I'm really trying to say is there's a reason why this doesn't come easy and why it triggers anxiety and why you feel awkward. It's not in your DNA. It's a skill set you have to learn. And there's probably not many people teaching you unless from whatever you learn on TikTok and YouTube. And some of that's good. A lot of it's not.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the girls then are also watching TikTok. And, well, this is how you be a girl. You know, you do this and you take selfies in a mirror and you post them on your social media and you get a lot of likes. And that's what, and, you know, and it's, nobody knows how to navigate this stuff. So you're normal. You're normal.
Yeah, I remember in terms of the YouTube stuff back then, I'd be listening to these like psychology YouTube channels. And it'd be like, seven signs that someone secretly has a crush on you. Like, it just was not helpful.
They twirl their hair, their eyes dilate, they cross their ankles. No, women twirl their hair because they're not very bright. I don't know.
How
do you get close enough? Was their eyes going to constrict or dilate? I don't remember. They cross their ankles. I don't know. There's actually better clues to know. But yeah, some of those clues that all the dating gurus used to teach, I go, really? No.
Yeah. And what do women actually find attractive then? What are some signs that indicate that they're attracted to you?
All right, let's go deep. You know, I've been saying something for a while, and you probably know who Chris Williamson is. And I said it in an interview with him. And he shared it with Alex Hormozi in an interview he did with him. And then he shared it with Mark Manson. And I've heard him share it with other people. But what I said is that the feminine is highly attracted to a man who's comfortable in his own skin, knows where he's going, and looks like he's having a good time getting there. For example, I'll share that when I do interviews like with female dating coaches or women coaches that work with men. I'll say that and the women all go, yeah. I mean, the women all go, it's visceral, right? You know, Alex or Mosey's going, yeah, and you can have this one and that goes with that. Yeah, that's great. You know, but the women are going, yeah. So I think there's something to the simplicity of that message. Mm-hmm. So a man who's comfortable in his own skin, maybe he's let go of his shame. He's worked on his insecurities. He's learned to like himself, right? He's accepted who he is. Maybe the whole, I call it the serenity plan. It's usually called the serenity prayer in 12 steps. You know, he's learned to change what he can and accept what he can't, right? So he's comfortable walking the planet. He knows where he's going. He's got a sense of purpose, a sense of passion. He knows he's making a difference in the world, whether that's getting to the gym regularly or you know, building his business or showing up at his job. You know, he's got purpose and he's having a good time, right? He's happy. He's got his bros. He's got his guy friends. He's got adventure in his world, and he's walking through open doors and he's having adventure. That is highly attractive to the feminine. And again, female dating coaches go, whoa. You know, Chris Williamson keeps spreading it, making it go viral. And I'm gonna say this again, just like when I used to come back in my second marriage from hanging out on a road trip with the guys, and my wife would say, I'm more attracted to you. Number one, you go away, but two, when you're with men, and then you come back with that energy. I was about 6-7 years ago, I went to this men's retreat in a men's program that I joined. It was my first year in it. I was in it for several years. We went to the Netherlands, and we're out in a retreat center in the middle of nowhere. So like with 50 guys just doing deep embodiment work. And this retreat center was, I don't remember if it was vegan or vegetarian, but there was no meat and not a lot of protein and a lot of carbs. I can't wait. And so we came back to Amsterdam, and at one night, about 12 of us went to an Argentinian steakhouse. We just needed meat.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
And so we're in this Argentinian steakhouse, 12 of us guys sitting outside of the long table. The owner was taking good care of us. We had a waitress just for our table. You know, he was bringing out good wines for us. And yeah, we're having a good time eating a lot of steak. And everywhere around us, I'd be pointing out to the guys with me, look, that woman's showing signals of interest. No, you're making that up. That woman too. No, you're making that. You're drunk, Robert. No, I'm not drunk, actually. These women are showing high interest. And what I was trying to communicate to the, I mean, we just spent like 5 or 6 days in a group, all with men, doing deep work with each other, embodiment work, and we were radiating a masculine energy, a polarity that was turning on everything feminine around us. And the guys around me just thought I was making it up. And I'd say, like, there was a woman sitting over there, was at a table with about like three couples at the table. And she's sitting across from a man. I don't know if it was her date or her boyfriend or whatever, but she actually turned her back to us, but she was sitting on her chair and she kind of hunched a hip up. And I said, look, that woman's sending signals of openness and availability. And the guy's going, no, she has her back turned to us. I go, yes, but she's jutting the hip. And this is something I learned from my wife. You know, she said, that woman's flirting with you. And I go, what? She's jutting her hip. I go, what's that? Well, it's primate behavior. Primates jut a hip when they say, I'm available, right? And we're primates. And so this woman, they're like, no, you're crazy. And I go, well, the woman, the waitress, she's probably 20, 22. I said, the waitress, you know, she just really vibing on being around all this. No, she's just doing her job. I said, I'll be right back. I went in. Told the waitress, I said, give me your number. I'm going to call you. That's all I said. She wrote her personal number down on a card and gave it to me. I walked out back, said, here's her number. How'd you get that? I told her to give it to me. And she just wrote it down and gave it. Really? You didn't do any of this? Didn't I go, no, I'm trying to tell you that door was already open. I didn't have to go do anything to open the door. I just had to walk through it. Then we went out. I was with maybe 4 or 5 of us. We went to a bar there in Amsterdam. And it was still pretty early. And so there weren't a lot of people in there, but there was a live band playing. And I was with a buddy of mine, and he had a backpack on, and he was real kind of geeky looking. But I noticed two young women standing side by side, just right behind us, a little bit to our side. And I noticed corner of my eye, they're kind of just standing there, moving to the music. They each had a drink in their hand. We're the only two guys standing out there. We weren't hardly anybody. But they were right behind us. And I told my buddy, John, back up a step. Let's back up a step. So we did, to where now they were kind of to our side or slightly in front. And then they just slowly kind of moved to where they were both standing right in front of us, right? And you know, where we can't miss them, right? And you know, they had a drink in their hand and they're kind of moving their bodies around and they'll look back a little bit. And I said, John, those women want our attention. I mean, our energy is just, they're open. And he goes, you're making that up. I mean, they're young. I go, yeah, but they're there. I don't believe you. And I said, okay. I said, take your phone out. Tap one of them on the shoulder and say, which one of you is the best photographer? Why don't you take a picture of my buddy and I? He did. And they both just like lit up and go, oh, I will. And then took the picture. And then they go, where are you guys from? They started the conversation. And I just said, John, I'm going to go get a drink. And I walked over to the bar and left him with them. these guys didn't believe me. But what I kept trying to say, we're radiating masculine energy, and the women are showing signals of availability, and most men are just fucking oblivious to it.
Yeah,
we don't know what to look. And honestly, I didn't for many, many years. It wasn't really probably till I was in my 50s that I started really noticing those signals. And it may be a woman just walking in front of you several more times than necessary.
Mm.
It might be the waitress who bends over and gives you the cleavage shot. Yeah, I always thought, oh, she doesn't know that we can look up her shirt when she leans over and reaches it. And women tell me, uh-huh, she knows it.
Yeah.
Women are dumb. They know you can see all the way up and you can tell what kind of bra they have on or if they're not wearing a bra. They know, right? Or when the woman leans into you or laughs or the hip jut or smiling, making eye contact. Mm. It really is relatively simple and animalistic and primate, but the problem is subtle.
Yes.
And we men don't get subtlety, right? Either we're not taught to look for it, or we think it must be for somebody else, not us. Who's she really looking at? Or we think we're going to get it wrong. And if we do approach, she's going to go, why are you talking to me? Or throw a drink in her face, or her boyfriend's going to come beat us up. These are the fears that guys have.
Yeah.
Even though I've never yet talked to anybody that's gotten beat up by somebody's boyfriend or got a drink thrown in their face. So nobody teaches us how to recognize those signals of attraction. Women have taught me. Women just right and left go, that woman's flirting with you. That woman's coming on to you. Really? What woman? How do you know that? And it's taken women to point it out to me and spell it out because no man ever taught that to me, right? And when I try to teach it to men, they go, oh, you're making that up. That can't be true. And what we wait for is the woman to put up a billboard that says, hey, Dick, ask me for my phone number, right?
Yeah.
We want them to be that blatant, but they're not wired to be that blatant.
Yeah.
And really, the women that are that blatant kind of scare me, right? Mm-hmm. I would rather have the subtlety because what she's really saying is take the lead, take action, you know, approach, you know, the door's open, just walk through it. One of my coaches posted on a signal thread with a bunch of other coaches, my coach training program. He's 50 and he still is in, he knows it, but he's still in this thing of thinks he's got to get a woman's approval, get them to like him, especially if they're going to have sex with him. So he's so just nice and goes so slow. And he just so almost like the women are going, come on, grow up. You know, I'm not your mother. And, and so he posted something the other day. He met a woman on the beach where he lives and, you know, got his nerve up, talked to her, got a number. And then there was something, I can't remember what it was. So the guys online were kind of coaching him how to go a little darker. But then there was one, I think it might've been, I don't know, the same woman or a different woman. He said something about they were doing something. I don't know if they were dancing or whatever. And she got all sweaty and apparently he had another t-shirt and he gave it to her to wear his t-shirt. She was all sweaty. And she said, well, you know, I'll get it back to you later. And so he said, I'm going to text her and say, oh, if you wash it and fold it for me, you can come in my hot tub or something. I go, no. Just text her that you want the t-shirt back and you want it smelling like her.
Mm-hmm.
And she wrote back and he says, well, I don't smell like all lavender and flowers, you know. So she bit, right? The door's open, right? And then she goes, I'll bring it over Monday night. I have this program I go to, but I'll be done at 7. I don't know how late you stay up. I mean, the door's open, right? Yeah. I'm bringing my shirt back. It's your shirt. It smells like me. I don't know how late you stay up. And then he just wrote back like just some real corny thing. And I go, the door was open. You didn't have to do it. You didn't have to, you know, think up something clever or sweet to say. She's coming to your house, you know, bringing a smelly t-shirt, you know, the door's open, just walk through the door. So even as he's getting coached, he couldn't believe these were signals of high interest that he didn't need to do. He didn't need to do anything to drive up her interest. He just needed to keep that ball rolling, right? That's all he had to do. So again, because kind of you ask about my mother, I was raised to be monogamous to my mom. You know, I had vagophobia for many years. I avoided putting my penis in vaginas. That'd make me a bad man. I grew up very fundamental Christian church, so that probably had something to do with it as well. I was also going to go to hell for all eternity. So that kind of factored in.
Yeah,
as well.
Yeah.
But like, my mother told my second wife, you know, after a few months after we got married, we're all at some little trip with the kids out at a river somewhere. And my mother, I don't remember the context, told my wife, "I saw him naked before you did." My mother's staking the claim. "He's mine, bitch," right? "He's mine. He came out of me. He's mine." And every woman I've dated, my wife says this frequently, says, "I think your mother's jealous of me." And I go, "Yeah, I have no doubt of that." So my mother claimed me, right? And so that affected my ability to get with women and get a woman who I could really love. And, you know, one who I was really like, not a woman that I shouldn't have dated over two dates, right? And now, I mean, Lupita, my wife, we've been married coming up on 9 years. She gets along with my mother well. They don't speak the same language, but, you know, they're both very strong women. I always like to watch the battle. Wish Mrs. Glover's going to win this battle. But yeah. Lupita will joke, like, if she's like kissing me, she'll go, "Oh yeah, mommy's over there sitting. Don't touch my boy. Don't touch my boy." You know? She's saying all this in Spanish, so my mom doesn't understand it. So yeah, I was claimed by my mother. I was supposed to be there to take care of her, which pretty much guaranteed I wouldn't notice the signals women were sending me, because then I have to actually take some action based on it. And for me, oh no, you know, I wasn't consciously aware of all those blocks, but yeah, I was definitely monogamous to my mother. And that's taken quite a bit of work. And again, I'll bring it back to, I had to do that work with men. Right? Mm. I had to get grounded with men. I had to realize it's okay to be a guy. It's okay to be a guy. It's okay to have sexual desire. In fact, women like that. You know, when I tell women what I teach men, and they, you know, I talk about how men are so scared of them. And, you know, I'll say something about men are afraid, you know, put their penis in vaginas. And women will say, "Tell the men, we like cock. We like cock." I go, "Okay, I'll tell them that," right? You know, again, we men have so many of these self-limiting beliefs, whether because of our mother, you know, our school system, you know, feminism, social media, disconnection from dad, no initiation, you know, whatever it is, we're afraid to walk through those open doors. And the truth is that the doors are open all around us if we know what to look for.
Mm. Yeah. And what are some behaviors to not recognize the doors, because we spoke about that, but if there's a guy who's like, "Okay, I'm aware of the doors, Robert, and I'm getting a bit better at this, but I still don't know how to escalate, I still don't know what to do in the situation once I've made contact with a woman," what do you say to that person?
Okay, I've got a lot of various mantras or little sayings, and so one of my favorite ones, I say, test, don't guess. Because we guys guess a lot. We overthink it, right? We've already talked about that. We overthink it. Well, she's looking at me, or did I misinterpret that? Or she's not doing the hair curl thing, but she is jutting a hip, you know. We overthink it, right? Well, what if I, you know, again, what if she's got a boyfriend? What if I, you know, misread it? What if? Basics is just walk up and engage.
Yeah.
Now, let's assume if she gave you a signal of interest, she made eye contact with you, smiled at you, she's walked in front of you a couple times, whatever. Let's assume the door's already open. You don't have to open it. You don't have to go pound on it. You don't have to go knock on it. It's open. You just got to go walk through it. And so what I've told men, if the woman's already opened the door, if she's already got high interest in you, you almost can't do anything to kill that. You can actually, like Chris Rock says, just don't do anything stupid, right? You know, she likes you. Don't blow it, right? If she's not interested, if the door isn't open, if you're pounding on a closed door just because you think she's hot or whatever, you almost can't do anything to drive that interest up, right? And maybe if you're really good at it, you can, but not that many men are really that good at it. But to me, I'd rather walk through the open door than pound on a closed lock. Mm-hmm. So I'm always watching for those signals. I mean, I've been married for 9 years, and so I've actually lowered the way I interact with the world in terms of just, I know how to flirt. I know how to engage. I know how to, you know, knock the door down once it's open. But I don't. And I don't react to all those tests. I mean, again, like I said, I'm at my wife's gym and there's women walking by strutting, you know, look at me, look at me. And so, you know, I just don't walk through those open doors. But I know how to amp them up. But I didn't learn until like in my 50s, right? So take action. That is the number one thing. The masculine feminine polarity, the masculine does, the feminine is done too. So she'll send you the signal, but she doesn't want to be the one to take the action.
Yeah.
You take the action. And so the test don't guess. One of the things that I kind of developed just through trial and error is something that I call testing for interest. And it has three levels. And all of them are not trying to get anybody to do anything. You're just testing how high is our interest in having an ongoing interaction with you. Level one is just social pleasantry. You're not trying to do anything. And this could be anybody just standing next to you in a line at a coffee shop or on a bus or airplane. Just how's your day going so far? Or they got shopping bags, been shopping. Just social pleasantry. That's all. And if they show high interest, they'll go, oh yeah, I've been out shopping and I got some cool stuff. I've had women start taking stuff out of their bag and show. I had one woman take lingerie out of her bag and show me. I'm just sitting at a bar or a restaurant going, oh, you've been shopping? Yeah, I was going buying some lingerie today and I got her number. You know, the door was open. Look at this lingerie I bought. She didn't know me from anybody. I'm just sitting next door at a bar, right? So social pleasantry. How's your day going so far? You know, in an elevator, how's your day going so far? High interest is, hey, it's going great. You know, it's off to a great start. How about you? If it's reciprocal at all, that's high interest.
Yeah.
Now, that may only last 15 seconds, 30 seconds, but that's okay. Low interest is, you know, they go, oh, fine. And they go back to looking at their phone, right? Or you say, been shopping? Yeah. Or you say, you know, what's good here? I don't know. You know, or what's good here? Oh, my favorite is, you know, da, da, da. So it's really simple. It's either high or low interest. Okay. From there, it can organically go to level two testing. Now, you don't try to make it. It'll just, you know, sometimes you just kind of start a conversation and it just takes off, right?
Yeah.
Some shared interest, some mutual connection, some, you know, something you guys, whatever. It could be you and another guy, right? It could be you and a woman. It could be you and a kid. It could be you and an adult. It doesn't matter. There's some connection that just happens organically. You don't try to make that happen. And again, that will often just last a minute or two or three. And then, nice to meet you. Good to talk to you. Have a great day. That's all it is. Level three testing, that if there seems to be some connection, some chemistry between you and the other person, and if you have an interest in perhaps seeing them again, you want to test how high is their perceived interest in continuing the interaction. Again, I've met most of my guy friends, especially when I was single, this is how I met my guy friends. I'm in a coffee shop. Or at the gym, but I had a golden rule. If I saw a guy at the gym more than twice, I had introduced myself to him. I'd make friends that way, right? And so level three is where you require something of them. Might be a phone number. Might say, hey, I got an idea. Let's go do such and such. And high interest is, yeah, I'd love to do that. Let's go. Or here's my number. You know, and if the woman spells her name along with it, that's a good sign, right? Now, if you say, hey, you know, give me your number. I got a plan. And she'll go, you know, I'm really busy these days, or I've got a boyfriend. Low interest. Doesn't matter if it's true or not. It's low interest. No harm, no foul. You know, if you say a guy, hey, you know, I got tickets to this game next week. Come join me. You know, I don't know. I probably can't get away. Okay, low interest. No worries. If a guy says, I'm in, you know, all right, give me your number. High interest. So test, don't guess. So the woman sends you a signal. Maybe you're going, oh, I think that was the hit, Jeff, the Dr. Glover talked about. Or she walked by me twice now with a little bit of, you know, sway to her. She walked by. Or she kind of looked my way. All right. Walk over and, you know, just say, hey, what's your story? You know, that's a good enough line. What's your story? Or even just say, what's your name? I try to have them tell me their name before I give them my name. Say, what's your name? It's a little bit more of a test to see, you know, how engaged they are. I'd even, you know, if you're like in a bar or something, I'm not big for bars and clubs and stuff. But if you are, just say, hey, buy me a drink. You know, there's the tell, you know, the touch, tease, and tell. And it's a high test of interest. She goes, I'm supposed to buy you a drink? And you say, yeah, well, tell you. Then make it a game. All right, let's play a little game to see who buys the first drink. Or you say, tell you what, you buy the first drink, I'll buy the rest of them for the rest of the night. I mean, so you're testing. Does she want to spend the rest of the night hanging out with you? So just do things to test, and it'll either be high or low. Don't overthink it. Well, was that? Maybe I was a medium lift. No. There's no medium. Right?
Yeah.
It's high, it's low. High interest is, yeah. You say, buy me a drink. You go, what do you have? You know, and you know, she takes your credit card out. or low interest is what? You know, no, I'm not buying you a drink. You know, what kind of, you know, no. So low interest. Okay. Okay. No harm, no foul. Move on. But that level three has to be a bold enough test that the reaction to it is equally bold so that you're clear. So I'll give you just a quick example. This was years ago. I was in a coffee shop on my laptop, and I used to spend a lot of time hanging out in coffee shops. And a woman sits down next to me and starts working on her laptop, and a little bit younger than me, pretty attractive. And again, I don't hit on women. I don't chase women. I haven't had to for 20 plus years. They open the door. I walk through. So I get up to go to the restroom, and I said, I got to go to the restroom. You keep an eye on my laptop for me? And she goes, yeah, sure. And I said, you can read my email. Just don't answer them. You know, I'm just testing. I'm just being social. And she responded with some joke back. Okay, all right. So I come back and I sit down, and she goes, you know, you got some pretty interesting email, but I didn't reply to any of them. You know, so we get to talking. And I said, what are you working on? And she said, oh, schoolwork. And I'm, oh, where do you go to school? She's going to university. And I said, what are you studying? And she says, marriage and family therapy. Now, I didn't tell her I have a doctorate in marriage and family therapy, right? I go, oh, really? You know, what do you like best about what you study? And, you know, she talked to, and I, you know, I could ask her some fairly intelligent questions because I already knew, you know, what she was studying.
Yeah.
And then I after a little bit, I told her, I said, actually, I have a doctorate in MFT. And I said, I'd like to get together with you. Give me your number. And she gave me her number. And I said, I'll get back to you. We'll connect. And I got to thinking later, I thought, you know, that wasn't clear enough. She might have thought this was purely, you know, kind of like professional, mm-hmm. you know, networking yeah, yeah. kind of thing. And I thought, I wasn't clear enough with that test. So a day or two later, Friday night, I was going to be at a club that has some live music at it. And I think it was pretty near where I think where she lived. And I sent her a text message. And I said, hey, I'm going to be at this club Friday night. Going to go listen to some live music. Come join me. So this is clearly more of a date, not a professional networking time, right? Club, Friday night, live music. And she said, oh, I'd love to, but it's my boyfriend's birthday. All the information I needed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And she was actually very kind in giving me that information. She got that I was testing mm-hmm. for her availability. She understood. And most women, if they're not available, they'll give you a pretty clear answer
yeah,
that they're
yeah,
not, yeah. right? Like, you know, you're talking, you know, baseball, whatever. Oh, my boyfriend's a big Yankees fan. Something they'll work it in there pretty early
because yeah.
they know you're testing, right? And so they'll help you out most of the time. Mm. I've gotten women's numbers and gone on dates and found out later they had boyfriends.
Wow.
So they don't always let you know, but usually the good women will let you know. So
yeah.
test, don't guess. Take an action. Remember, you don't have to drive up her interest. She already opened the door. You just have to see how high her interest is. And then be willing to walk through that door and lead. And if you have an interest in seeing her and getting to know her, say, give me your number. I got an idea. I got a plan. I'm going to get back to you in the next day or so. And then, you know, make sure you get her name to put in there with it. When I was single, I'd go through my phone about every 6 months and clear out all the numbers that just had a woman's first name that I couldn't remember who they were. I got that many numbers. It was not hard. I could not believe how easy it was. I always thought it was hard to get numbers. But if the woman already has opened the door and you've tested for interest accurately, you get numbers right and left.
Yeah. It's just the limiting beliefs, isn't it? It's people stopping themselves from doing it.
So much of it is. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll leave it there, though. Dr. Robert Glover, ladies and gentlemen. Robert, I really, really appreciate this. I think it's much needed, and I know a lot, especially the young people, but every guy.
Oh yeah, no, there's guys my age that need this stuff. You know, the guys my age go, oh, I'm too old. No. You're not too old. I'm 69, and you know, there's still 20 somethings and teenagers coming on to me. It does happen. So no, you're not too old. Comfortable in your own skin, know where you're going, look like you have a good time getting there, and yeah. Walk through the open doors, test, don't guess.
Mm, exactly. And just believe. Just believe you can.
Why not? Yeah. Why not?
What's the harm in that?
It's just as easy to believe things might go well as it is to believe they won't go well. Believing things won't go well, it's just our way of trying to control things so we don't so we don't have to feel anxious.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, to leave it, where can people go if they want to find your work?
Puerto Vallarta. I'm hanging out down here in PV. Come. Go to drglover.com. It has my workshops, my courses, my books, my classes. And integrationnation.net is my men's membership program. So the guys out there want to connect with a community of men that I show up in regularly, integrationnation.net.
Awesome. Yeah. Leave links to that in the description for everyone to check out now. Go check it out, guys.
Thanks, Jacob.
Awesome. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. This is fun. I appreciate the invite.
If you've made it this far, you're likely not just a listener. You're ready to be the host. You felt that sense of intimacy and connection with our guest today, and you would like to get the same on your own show and start your own dream show. But you're worried about landing dream guests and all the complications and the mess that is often spoken about when starting your own podcast from scratch. You think starting a podcast requires a huge budget and a whole team, right? That is absolute nonsense. My Pro Remote Podcast Blueprint is the ultimate key to skipping the outdated advice and building a high quality, high impact show, even for under $100. It provides the proven strategies and AI templates that I use this day that you will be able to use to reclaim your time and creative control. And this is a strictly limited opportunity. Don't dilly-dally because there's limited spaces. We've already got one student, Rob, who's joined. That means there's only a couple more spaces to get the Pro Remote Podcast Blueprint course half price. And you need to act very, very fast because this is a limited offer and you're very, very early. So if you want to get the early bird discount like Rob has and get the results by watching the course that goes through the exact step-by-step blueprint that I use to this day to create these episodes that you've just watched and get the success and become Europe's fastest growing under 21 podcaster, and also join live weekly calls with me and use the AI templates and email templates that I use every single day to get the results and just get all my secrets without getting any of the mistakes and failures that I've made, then top link in the description is for you. And if you're ready to launch your own show and get personalized one-to-one help from me and copy my blueprint, which no other podcaster has shared, then I'll see you there. I'm rooting for you. Goodbye. Hope you enjoyed the episode too.